It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Tucson with no destination in mind. I was running from trouble and the jail term the judge had in mind. And the border meant freedom, a new life, romance.
How you doing there, Brent? That's very nice. That's kind of mellow, George Strait. Little waltz, little string section.
Almost new country-ish. That music can only mean one thing. Oh, by the way, it's primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. I'm Bob McCown. That's Stephen Brunt. David Branch will join us in a little bit, the president of the Canadian Hockey League, commissioner of the OHL. The music is in tribute to our next guest, who is a big country music fan in general, but a George Strait fan specifically. Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun is with us. Hello, Elliott.
Hello, Robert.
Oh, very nice. I got billing.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
What's up?
Apparently,
you're
the World Series.
You're accurate when you said a fan of the of George Strait, and I guess second on the list would be this finally produced radio show.
That's great that we're number two.
The hell, I'm not happy about that.
No, to George Strait though, that's pretty good. And in Bob,
the reception's not that good in Kansas City.
We'll work on it. We'll move the rabbit ears and see if the hamster can spin on that wheel a little bit faster.
Ryan, bear down.
Weather an issue at all tonight?
No, actually, it's I've only been here 8 days. It's the nicest day. it's the nicest day since I've been here. I'm allowed to vote in the Missouri election.
But, you know, there are some of us who are old enough to remember Kansas City as a playoff baseball town, a World Series town, and it was a great one. It has been quite a while. What's it like now, and is it, you know, does it remind you of, you know, 85 and beyond? Is it different? What's it like?
The only time I was ever here in the postseason was for Toronto in 85, and there is that kind of excitement. I wouldn't say I'm going to the same places as I did in 1985, but it's to go over the game films afterwards, the post game, but it's a happening place. The excitement with I don't know if you saw what they did when they won the wild card. Hosmer tweeted out, "Meet me at McFadden's," and the bill was, I don't know, $21,000. He invited everybody.
God love him.
I don't think that would have happened in 1985 either. But there was a lot of celebrations when they came back and they beat the Blue Jays, and then they duplicated defeat 10 days later against the Cardinals after being down 3-1.
It is one of those places, though. You know, when I think about it, it's there were a lot of bleak years, and there were a lot of empty seats at times in that stadium. But it was one of those places where you knew that if they ever got good, they would completely, you know, re-embrace this thing. It, you know, it's kind of a baseball town that was in suspended animation for a long time. You know, there's places, right, I think, where it wouldn't matter as much. But I think you kind of knew it would matter in Kansas City.
Yeah, it's a big deal here, I think if you're a Blue Jay fan, it gives you something to look forward to. You know, the Blue Jays are 21 years, and it took these guys 29, so they only have 8 more years to wait.
Thanks for that, Bob.
Great. That's encouraging news. Is this a fan base that is, and you've been there long enough, I guess, to kind of absorb some of this, outside of Kansas City, people are... I think most people are a combination of shocked and yet happy for the Kansas City Royals. It's a great feel-good story, but nobody believed this was possible. And most people expect this balloon to be burst by the San Francisco Giants at some point over the next few days in any event. Having said that, I'm interested in how the fans in Kansas City are reacting to, you know, the news from the outside?
Well, whether it's the lady at the front desk wearing the Royals blue jersey, or the lady with the blue eyelashes, or the guy in the blue jersey, I mean, they think they're running the table. That's how confident they are. They're going to win four here. I mean, how about this? They're in the World Series. They've only had two home games. Excuse me, three home games. One against Baltimore, two against Baltimore, one against Anaheim, and then I guess the wild card. So they've had four home games, which is a little on the, you know, a franchise like this for revenue. They could use it, but they'll get at least two more here. But I would think the thing I would say about what you addressed, Robert, with balloon bursting, I would think the role that they were on, that 6-day layoff, that has to hurt them.
Yeah. Does it?
It's like in that postseason in the hockey, you want to play every day if you're going good.
Well, but mind you, they had a layoff before the Baltimore series as well. I think 4 days, if I remember correctly. But the Orioles had a similar kind of layoff. So maybe that balanced out. And this one, look, at San Francisco's layoff's been, what, 1 day shorter, 2 days shorter?
2 days shorter.
Yeah, it's not exactly critical, I wouldn't think, nonetheless.
Bob, as a baseball guy, does it bother you in any way that, you know, based on, you know, with the expanded playoff format being the reason, but based on what these teams were over 162 games, that these are probably the worst two teams ever to meet for the World Series?
That's a good point, Stephen. Does it bother me? No, because you're here and you see the excitement and it's new blood. I feel like I'm a Kansas City beat writer. I'm writing so much about this team, but it's a good story. I mean, I think their payroll is 17th best. It's not Yankees Red Sox. Yankees Red Sox, and this year was supposed to be the Dodgers. It was supposed to be the Dodgers in Anaheim. And so I think what I hate to give Selig credit, but I think what they wanted to do is create some parity, and I think they've done that. You know, like, If you, I don't know where they would have been ranked. I think the one out of Vegas was at 12-1 when the 10 postseason teams were established, and the other one was at 16-1. Like, one was last and one was third last, a long shot, you know. So I mean, that's great. You like to see upsets. I do.
You have a team that won 88 games against a team that won 89 games, and I think this is to Brunt's point. I mean, you know, this is. Well, this isn't what you generally expect.
Yeah, and just the thing that
I agree, but the Baltimore series, it's a sweep, okay? So usually you cover a sweep, and there's an 8-1 win in there or something like the Baltimore game. The Baltimore series, Kansas City scored 3 in the 10th. Baltimore scored 1 in the 10th, and they had 2 guys on. That's pretty dramatic. The next game, game 2, they score 2 in the 9th to win. Now they come to Kansas City. Kansas City wins 2-1 both games. Yeah. That's not, I mean, in my mind, that's not a sweep. That's exciting baseball.
Look, I'm with you on that, Bob, and I've loved it. Like, it's been a great postseason. But I'm just, there is probably, I know there's a traditionalist point of view,
few games. Yeah.
Yeah, and that you're devaluing the 162 game season in the end.
Yeah.
So you don't buy that?
Well, I think there's something to be said. I think there's something to be said. It's the first time that both wild card teams have been in it, what, since 2002, I think? Marlins, I think it was. It's been a while. I agree you have devalued it, but it's not like somebody had one bad game, and that's the only reason Kansas City fluked in, you know? I mean, maybe you want to say Oakland had 4 bad innings, but after that, they outclassed Baltimore. They outclassed Anaheim. I mean, the way they pitched Anaheim, Pujols, Hamilton, Trout are all like 1 or 2 for 15 or 18. That was impressive. I think you got to give Kansas City some credit. On the other hand, I agree with you. It should be the better team, but if you don't want to have any postseason, what are you going to do? Just say, okay, the guy that got the most wins, he's the World Series, he's the champion?
Well, you know, once upon a time, there was only 2. And again, I'm not saying that's the better system, but, you know, they have edged, you know, closer to the way other sports, baseball has edged closer to the way other sports operate, I guess. And there's some good to that, and, you know, there may be some people would say there's some bad to that.
Yeah, if you're spending the money that the Dodgers are and the Yankees and the Red Sox, you're going to be upset. Hey, who are these guys? They only outspent 10 or 12 teams, and they're playing for the World Series ring.
I think
the Giants were seventh.
It should be pointed out that the Kansas City Royals payroll is around $92 million, which is, and I think that would surprise some fans.
I think it's still 17th, though.
19th, I think, overall. But nonetheless, you know, this is a team that not so many years ago had a payroll in the $55 million range and was at the bottom. They have elevated their payroll. This is not the Sisters of the Poor that we're talking about here. We're talking about a team that doesn't spend a huge amount of money, but it's not at the bottom of the barrel.
But I find it interesting that the two teams still alive. They're both the general managers are former scouts. Dayton Moore he broke in with the Braves, and Sabian, he broke in with the Yankees. So that says a little something for the analytics crowd, I think.
When we go to other sports, whether it's and I'll try and put a comparable on it, and they're not really comparable, but an NBA final, a Stanley Cup final, even a Super Bowl, one of the things we invariably what we do is we tend to address the issue of matchups. How do these two teams match up? We understand they got to where they are, so they're very good at what they do. Do matchups in baseball mean significantly less than they do in other sports? Is it relevant to look at Kansas City's pitching staff versus how they projected to match up against San Francisco's eight batters? I mean, are those things even relevant in baseball?
Well, I don't think it's a big deal. Like if you say, who's going to get the most hits, Mike Moustakas or Pablo Sandoval, like at third base, you know,
right.
Like which is going to be the better third baseman? I mean, you could have the guy with the least amount of hits at five positions out of nine and still win it. But no, I think the positions, the matchups, like Bumgarner's pitching tonight, he's going to affect their running game because he's left-handed.
Right.
I think the matchups and their previous success, they played three times this year, and you know they've all faced each other going over the years or whatever. I think matchups like pitching matchups, I think they have that there's some significance to them, Robert.
And in a matchup sense, do you give San Francisco an edge?
I give San Francisco an edge, yes.
Do you believe that experience will matter because all of the experience in this series is on San Francisco's side?
Well, I would think so, but, it's so goofy. I was sitting there at game four, and I was sitting beside Duquette, not the general manager, but Jim that does radio for one of your competitors. And... first play, the Infante makes a great play. Another ball hit hard for the Orioles. So now it's two out, a man on second for Kansas City. The guy hits a little dribble up the middle. Second baseman standing there, it hits the base, it goes in the center field, and it's a run score. So it's 1-0 when it should have been for Kansas City, and it should have been. Second and third, I guess. But I mean, the point is, we just looked at each other and it said it's not one of those days for Baltimore. I mean, it's amazing they could steal bases with all these horseshoes they're carrying.
Is there any lesson that can be learned from what Kansas City has done here? If you're running a different organization, horseshoes, right?
No, they've got some horseshoes. But you look at that outfield. I mean, Aoki is a great defensive outfielder, okay? They get to the seventh inning and they're leading, and they'll pinch run Dyson, and then they move their center fielder to right field. I mean, they are a very, very athletic team outside of Billy Butler. And that's the way I think, as we spoke a time before, Robert said how it's the copycat industry, and they will do that. And I think this year, I think the deal is, it goes into the draft. I think teams will be drafting more and more athletic players, like the guy that maybe if you looked at him on the football field, like Lorenzo Cain, where would you see him, as a wide receiver or as a cornerback?
Mm-hmm.
you know, you would see him playing whatever the most athletic position is in football. You guys know I don't.
Well, no, but I think what we're also going to see, and when I talk about copycats, and I think you know this, if Kansas City is ultimately successful, and maybe even now general managers are looking down and saying, you know, the stolen base isn't such a bad idea. Now, you got to have the guys who can do it, but maybe we should focus more on those kinds of players, have at least a couple of them in our system. They have to be able to get on base in order to be effective as base stealers. And yes, they have to have extraordinary speed and intuition and the skill set, a lot of which we can teach in the minor leagues in order to do it. But the notion of eliminating the stolen base as a weapon, which, I mean, I don't know that it's been done systematically, but there are teams out there that don't subscribe to it. I wonder whether they'll be readdressing that as a result of what they've seen. And I think they will, don't you?
I think they will, and also, the bunt. I'm not a big guy for bunting in the third inning or the second inning, but you get to the eighth or ninth inning. The Giants bunted against Randy Chody, throws the ball in the left field corner, warm up the bus, the game's over. You know, they didn't have to get another hit. It's a lot of times bad things happen. That wasn't even putting pressure on anybody. All he had to do was pick it up and take one step and throw it, and he didn't. He flew open, and the ball's down in there by where the 70-year-old ball guard sits.
Now, on the other side, Bob, if San Francisco wins this series, and I think it sounds like you think they're going to, and I kind of think they're going to.
Three.
They win, so three of us. They win three out of five. You know, it's a hell of an accomplishment right. In the modern world of sports, certainly in the modern world of baseball. You know, people don't talk about them like they're a dynasty, but that's pretty close, isn't it?
Well, the amazing thing is, if 2 years ago, the first two runs, they had Matt Cain in there, they had Lincecum in there. Well, I guess Lincecum was in the bullpen.
Second time was the bullpen.
Last one, but
yep.
But Cain's injured. Lincecum started the season in the rotation. Now he's in the bullpen. If Moneyball is to the extreme right or extreme left or whatever side, and then the anti-Moneyball is way over here, the Giants would be in another column, you know, like Sabian. They're baseball guys. They go fly by their gut, and guess what? They've had some pretty good instincts. Three out of five. They've got. Everybody says who's the next face of baseball with Jeter retiring. I think it's their catcher, Posey.
Yep.
But outside of that, you look the third baseman. He looks like he's playing on one of those softball three pitch, slow pitch teams. You know,
he's an unconventional athletic body, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Terribly. Yeah. You know, he looked like he I'll have another round of quartz.
It's like a sports writer, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
He may be a Blue Jay next year. You never know.
But, you know, neither Bob nor I put a whole lot into managers, but, you know, Bruce Bochy's pretty darn good, I think.
I think, with La Russa and Cox going into Cooperstown this year, I think he's probably, you know, we didn't talk about managers for years and years, but I think you're probably looking at, when the TV comes on tonight, you're looking at a Hall of Fame manager. Down the road, he wins three out of five.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, that he hasn't been, you know, even winning two out of the last two, that hasn't really been the conversation. But I think the guy has been kind of overlooked, weirdly, if you can be overlooked winning World Series.
Yeah, well, the thing about him, Stephen, he's a sharp guy, but he dumbs it down, really dumb. He really dumbs it down for us, and he really dumbs it down for the players. He's an intelligent man. He just... Well, golly gee, I'm really delirious about this win. You know, they threw the ball away or whatever it was. I'm looking at the picture. I was watching ESPN. I'm thinking, this is delirious? I got to look up the dictionary. he didn't even smile. I'm delirious.
So, how does this series go in your eyes?
I think the Gigantes, probably about six or seven. Despite all... horseshoes. What do you think, Steven?
Yeah, I just kind of believe in the Giants, and maybe it's because I watched that. You know, I covered that second series when they wiped out the Tigers. I know it's a slightly different cast, but you know, and I like Bumgarner as the kind of linchpin in terms of the pitching.
I think it's five. Yeah. I think it's a quick series for San Francisco, and I feel badly for the folks in Kansas City. It's been a great ride. I think it's a mediocre collection. They've got some exciting talent on that team, but I don't think they have all the ingredients. I think the ride inevitably comes to an end. Hot is only hot until you cool off. And I think that the hot run is about to end. I like San Francisco pretty comfortably, probably split in Kansas City and then sweep them back home, and that'll be the end of that.
So we're unanimous. Wow, that never happens.
Yeah, it probably means Kansas City will win in four straight.
Mm-hmm.
Win in three.
Yeah, and then San Francisco concedes. Thank you, Mr. Elliott, as always. We enjoy it. Enjoy the rest of the World Series, and we'll probably pick up the phone and call you before this thing is over.
All right, I'll always answer if I know it's you.
Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun in Kansas City, where tonight, finally, the World Series gets going. Giants against the Royals.
It'll be rocking there tonight.
A class action lawsuit has been filed against the Canadian Hockey League by a Toronto lawyer on behalf of CHL players, seeking about $180 million in damages and essentially minimum wage for junior hockey players. We'll address that issue with the commissioner of the OHL and president of the CHL. David Branch joins us next when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Bottom of the hour, Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. It's a subject that we've been discussing, actually, for many months, even years. The notion that at some point in time, somebody may, and somebody actually has, tried to form a union or association for junior hockey players. And if that happens, what does it mean in terms of their needs, desires, demands? How would that impact the economics of junior hockey as we know it today? Well, there's been lots of saber rattling, lots of talk, but now there is fundamental action. A Toronto-based lawyer has filed a $180 million class action lawsuit seeking minimum wage compensation for CHL players. He wants a judge to rule the teams must start considering its on-ice talent as employees and approach their personal contracts accordingly. David Branch is the president of the Canadian Hockey League and commissioner of the OHL. Hello, David. How are you?
Hey, Bob. I've had better introductions, but good.
It's not in reference to you, obviously, but, you know, it's not like you didn't see this coming. We didn't see this coming. Stephen and I have talked about this for a long period of time. You and I and Steve have talked about it a couple of times over the past, I don't know, want to say 18 months or so. But here it is. An action has actually been filed. This isn't a threat. This isn't an attempt to organize an association or a union. This is an actual action. So give me your general reaction to this now that you've had a chance to look at it.
Well, we just heard about it yesterday. We've not yet been served. Certainly am aware of some of the details, Bob. But to your point, I mean, there's been a lot of saber rattling, as you say. And of course, over the last number of years, and I always point to about 10 years ago, you know, our owners, our leagues made a conscious decision to invest in the player experience like no other league does, to provide the best player experience, invest in developing the player, not only as a player, but as a person. And we've had great success with that because, as we all know, there's other options out there. And we want to make our option the best, the most attractive for players and their families, quite frankly. And we hope that through this, we can actually tell our story even more to those that really don't understand the extent to which we currently provide support to our players, both on and off the ice, and help them develop.
But Dave, but somebody listening might well say that, yeah, if you're talking about the scholarship program, which is admirable, you know, everybody agrees with that, but that you were protecting your own interests because you're competing with U.S. college hockey to keep your players.
Yeah, we're the only league that does it. I mean, and $6 million plus, Steve, is not annually is not an insignificant number. But it goes much beyond a scholarship program, you know, I would suggest. I mean, we provide $470 a month to each player towards his expenses. We provide billets. Billet families pay for all their meals and travel. We pay for all their schooling, books, tuition, room, and board, of course, while they play in our league. And we have a 98% graduation rate of high school because we support their academic needs and interests, which is about 30 points higher than the provincial average for young people in the same age group. We provide the Hockey Canada National Insurance Medical Dental Program. We provide every player and his family $500 annually towards a disability insurance premium. We give each player $1,000 for off-season training towards his off-season training costs. We provide all equipment, including sticks and skates, which in today's world is astronomical. We've invested in, because we feel it's important, in our drug education and anti-doping program. We've invested in the concussion management program. We've invested in the Canadian Mental Health Program, which we announced recently. We have the best in coaching, the best in training. And as you touched on, we feel we have the best scholarship program in North America, because it's not just for university. It can be applied, of course, to college, trade schools, EMS training, police academy, you name it. And it's being used, and it's a great thing for our players. And that's the approach we've taken, is to provide these programs rather than putting, you know, another $100, $200 in the jeans of a player each week or whatever the case may be.
But that stuff seems to me to be the cost of doing business. You know, skate, sticks, insurance, that kind of stuff is the cost of doing business. You know, we had Mark Hunter on here tonight, Dave, who runs, you know, up until today, was running, co-running a very, very successful operation in London. They sell, 8,000-9,000 tickets a game. And the reason they sell those tickets is because of the talent on the ice. A lot of, you know, elite junior players. But they don't, you know, they're charging market rates for those tickets. And they get their sticks and they get their pucks and they have a scholarship program, which is great. And it's great that you guys have cleaned up the educational thing, because it was a scandal in junior hockey for a long time. But $50 a week for those kids? Like, that's the question a lot of people are listening to this are going to ask. Is that fair compensation given the amount of revenue that they generate?
Well, if you reside in Owen Sound and Belleville and Kingston, Swift Current, Prince Albert, Bathurst, Rimouski, the list goes on and on and on. Peterborough, you name it, Sarnia. I mean, yes. I mean, people judge us by London, which in many ways we understand. And it's good, because there's no question the Knights are a model franchise. We wish we all had 9,000 seats. We wish we all had markets 350,000 or greater, but we don't. That's the real, real issue here. And we blend things together. We do have some revenue sharing programs in place to help subsidize the smaller markets. It's a challenge. But we don't cry poor, Steve. And nobody wants to hear that. We get enough of that in our daily lives.
But, Dave, it would seem, though, and again, I understand that there's market differentials, and I know London's not everywhere, right? I understand that. But it's a business. But it would seem that it's a business for everybody except the players.
Well, I mean, one amateur sport isn't a business today. And that's the problem and challenge here for all of us. I mean, ask parents. They're so glad to hand their son over to us after spending, I don't know, $15,000, $20,000 a year to play AAA hockey by way of cost. They recognize and appreciate what we're doing, what we're providing, and we do it better and provide more than any other league, Stephen.
But no one's Dave. No one's selling tickets to watch for those kids to play. You know, watch those kids play midget or bantam hockey. This is a different kind of business, right?
Yeah, no, I beg to differ. There's all sorts of leagues that sell tickets.
Yeah,
you
but
know, we're not the only one.
But are you going to okay? But you can't compare the business model of a midget hockey team to a major junior team, can you?
Oh, I wasn't. Not at all.
Okay.
No, not at all. No, I'm talking about other junior leagues that are out there that provide opportunities for players to come and play.
Sure.
That do extremely well. And then, you know, I wouldn't bad both another league, but no one comes close to what we provide to the player. And we would rather, you know, give the player this experience and invest in his development for his own benefit as a person than just give him what, minimum wage? You know,
But you could do both. You could do both.
Well, financially, we know we can't. And I really don't want to get into, well, what programs would you pull back? That isn't what this is all about. We believe we will certainly demonstrate what we provide our players, the benefits they accrue, and hopefully take a stand for any number of other amateur sport leagues.
I just want to clarify one probably minute, but I think important point. Mr. Charney is quoted as talking about paying kids $50 a week. Stephen alluded to that number a minute ago. Is that the right number? Did you not say earlier you pay in excess of $400 a month to kids?
Yeah, that number is something that was part of our plan several years ago. We switched that and now call it an expense allowance, and it's $470 a month to players 19 and younger, and $900 a month to the 20-year-old overage players that play in our league, Bob. And it's just a case of trying to provide, you know, a few more dollars for the players and their families, quite frankly.
So the point is, though, the reference to $50 a week, that $50 stipend doesn't even exist anymore.
That would be correct. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me get to the other point here, and this becomes important because the, and I know you've talked about it a lot, and we understand why. The educational program that you've instituted and operate, which allows for a young man who plays in the OHL or played in the OHL to get an education which is paid for essentially by the league. Again, Mr. Charney cites the case of a fellow by the name of Sam Berg, Bill Berg's son, the former Toronto Maple Leaf, who played 8 games with the Niagara Ice Dogs last year, suffered an injury. The lawsuit claims that Sam was told that if he played even one exhibition game, he'd be entitled to a 4-year scholarship. But when all was said and done, he wound up with a half a year of tuition to represent the amount of time he played. Do you want to address that?
Well, let me speak around it because I really don't want to, you know, get into specific details as it relates to the young guy, Sam Berg. But our scholarship program, which is second to none, you can guarantee it okay for 4 years upon playing one game. That's an option that you can negotiate. Now, we define a guaranteed contract by saying even if you're cut by the team because it's deemed you do not have the necessary ability to play at that level, you're still entitled to your 4 years. We say that even if you're injured and unable to play, you are entitled to your 4 years of hockey or education paid. The only thing that will negate your contract then is if you quit the team. And that's the only element that will cause a contract that's been guaranteed for our team and our league not to respond to.
But Dave, that contract's negotiable, right? So it's up to the player to try and get that out of the team?
No, the 97% of our players have agents and representatives and the like. And yes, there's a negotiation process that certainly exists, Stephen. The minimum every player that gets and receives is one year of tuition and books for every year played. But you can enhance your education scholarship program if the team is willing to do that and the like.
But I'm just, again, I know we're not supposed to talk about the specifics here, but isn't he saying that he got a half a year?
Got a half a year.
No, actually, he's getting a full year. Even though we define a full year as being on a team's roster as of the 10th of January of that year in which you played. But he's getting, the league is responding with 1 year.
Okay, so again, I just got to, just to understand this, I thought if you played one game, you were entitled to this, if you presumably negotiated that. What's the January 10th thing?
Well, we define a 1 year played as being on the roster as of the 10th of January. Half a year if you are on the team's roster, I believe the middle of October, Stephen. I'm not absolutely certain. But, I mean, in this instance, it was a full year he's getting for the 8 games that he played.
So nothing's locked in if you play one game or one exhibition game unless you and your agent manage to get that out of the team.
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
Well,
it's locked in.
Well, I thought this, again, it wasn't this, you can negotiate, if your agent successfully negotiates with a junior team, you can be guaranteed your full scholarship even if you only play a game, correct?
Yes.
But if you don't successfully negotiate that, you have to be on the team until January 10th in order to have qualified for, in order to have played a quote year, which gets you what, at minimum, 1 year?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
But Stephen, there's other levels of negotiations. Like we have a policy in our league. You must provide an educational benefit to a player for playing one game. That's a rule of our league as well.
But again, that sounds, Dave, forgive me, but that sounds more like a business to me. You know, an entertainment business than it does an amateur sports organization.
So what do we do, Stephen? Not give him anything? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying you should give more. But I'm just saying if I'm a player and part of what I'm negotiating for is this educational benefit that I thought everybody was entitled to automatically, then that sounds like, you know, that sounds like a business negotiation to me, doesn't it?
Well, I guess that is one way to put it. We put it as trying to protect and serve the best interests of the players.
If they can get it.
Well, they're given something, Stephen. Everybody gets something, and no other league gives it. So, I mean, why are we criticized for giving something when no one else does? And that's something that I think, you know, we try and message out as well, that no one does it better.
Well, if a kid plays in the NCAA, he's getting that, isn't he?
Not necessarily. There's no guaranteed scholarships in the NCAA.
That's a fact. I mean, indisputable.
And you know what? Most of them are grant-made. You're not necessarily getting books and tuition. You're not getting necessarily all of your equipment. But I've had lots of friends whose kids have gone and played in the NCAA, and it's cost them a lot more money than they otherwise would have paid if they played in CIS hockey, Canadian University hockey. So, I mean, our program is far superior. And I'm not knocking the NCAA. It's good for many. I played NCAA. I mean, it's just a case of responding and investing where we think it's best to help the player progress, develop, as not only as a player, but as a person.
Let me take a slightly different tact here. If this lawsuit were to be successful and you were mandated to pay every player $10 an hour.
$11 an hour.
Okay, $11 an hour. I was going to do easy math, but okay, complicate my life. $11 an hour. Times what, I don't even know how you'd calculate the work week, but let's say it's a 40-hour work week. Now you're talking $440 per player per week times, you know, 23, 4 players, and on and on and on.
Right.
What's the impact to the Canadian Hockey League and to its individual franchises?
Well, I can be...
Does it put you out of business? Is it that bad?
It wouldn't put us out of business, Bob, in my view. But what it would do is cause various programs we currently have in place to be altered. And we feel confident that if we were to walk into a room of players and parents and say, here's option A, minimum wage, versus here's option B, everything that we currently provide, based on feedback and our understanding, option B would be the way people would want to go.
Have you presented it that way to various parents?
You know what? We haven't. But I can tell you, Bob, it's a great question. We're going to, in fact, pull all our parents and players and ask that very question. Because, hey, we want to serve the needs and interests, and let's make sure we're doing it the right way.
Could you see CHL franchises going under with the additional burden of a minimum wage program?
Over and above our existing programs that we offer, I don't believe it's unreasonable for me to state absolutely that there's several of our franchises that could not financially sustain our operations.
But you would.
I mean, I don't want to get into that, Bob, because I mean, hey, that isn't what this is about in our mind. And if we have to readjust our business model, okay. But hopefully we don't. And this is something too that we feel we have a responsibility to other amateur sport governing bodies to vigorously defend our position, because it could have a huge impact on any number of other sports as well. And certainly have had other national sports governing bodies contact us, and they're very interested in watching us closely, and certainly will support us going forward if the need be.
And not to dwell on this, but just as a point of clarity here, so that I understand where you're coming from. If this suit was to be successful and you were to have to pay minimum wage to all these kids, it at least probably, if not assuredly, would force you to cut back on many, some even all, of the additional programs that are currently in place. Is that accurate?
Well, you know what, Bob, to say that way, it's almost like I'm threatening, and we're threatening. I don't want to do that. That isn't what this is about. You know, but on the other hand, yes, we'd have to adjust our business model. We just couldn't afford to provide and do what we're currently doing. And you know, we've done a great job, and we're going to continue to do and respond to the needs of the players to the best possible extent here.
We'll watch with great interest to see where this story goes. Thank you, David, as always, for your candor.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Stephen.
David Branch, president of the CHL, commissioner of the OHL. You got about 90 seconds.
Yeah. It's a business model made on not paying the talent. You know, based on not paying the talent. If you have to pay the talent, then you obviously have to adjust your business model. But it's an entertainment business. You know, it is. And it's a for-profit entertainment business in which the talent is not paid. You know, the scholarship thing is lovely, although we now know you have to negotiate to get that guarantee. You're not, you know, just by showing up, making the team, you don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it depends who you are as a player, you know, being drafted into the league, how much leverage you have. But the other stuff, you know, don't tell me you're paying for the skates, you know, or the sticks. I think you got to do that.
Right. And I mean, I think it equates to me to the situation with the NCAA in many ways.
Mm-hmm. You mean in terms of the O'Bannon suit and the various things that are going on? Down.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we endorse the notion that the kids should get something. The issue is how much.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the part that I'm trying to get my head around is they want minimum wage. It doesn't sound like much, but when you do the math and you add up all the dollars and cents, how many teams in the CHL can actually afford that?
It'd be an interesting accounting, I would say.
Well, and that's the core. That's where I'm trying to get at.
Some of them certainly can.
And would do parents, if David goes to these parents and asks them, you can have this or you can have that?
How many are going to choose
minimum wage?
Well, why not both? Why not minimum wage plus the chance to go to school?
Well, but I mean, that's the business may not be able to support
that.
Well,
I guess we'd find out.
Well, yeah, maybe you have to choose before you get to find out, I suppose. Our thanks to Bob Elliott and David Branch for joining us. See you tomorrow.